I met the speaker, Karen, and we had a little chat tonight. I was very impressed when she told me that her sponsor is Clancy. I've listened to his tapes. So I'm sure that she's going to have a wonderful message. So would you please help me welcome Karen from Pacific Group in West Los Angeles.
Hi, everybody. I'm Karen Garrison, and I'm an alcoholic. And it's truly through the grace of God and the power of Alcoholics Anonymous that I've been sober since May 30th, 1982, and that does not make me a miracle. Alcoholics Anonymous is a miracle. And if you're new here tonight, I want to welcome you today. And I always call it God's magnificent AA, the program that saved my life, and it's going to save yours too, if you want to take a few quick actions. And I suggest strongly that you get a sponsor, that you get that book, Alcoholics Anonymous, and you get busy. Everybody else is doing around here, and you're going to stay sober. So I've stayed sober for 26 years, and people like me cannot stay sober, I can guarantee you. My home group is the Pacific Group in West LA, a group I'm very, very proud to be a member of, just as I'm sure you're proud to be a member of yours. And I guess if you're not proud, you ought to get a job, and you might change your mind. I certainly have a job in mind, and I'm proud to have that job. I want to thank Bob and the committee for inviting me. This is an honor and a privilege. It's one that I do not take lightly, I'll guarantee you. You guys, I love Alcoholics Anonymous. I really do. And I think that it shows, and I make an awful lot of mistakes, and an awful lot of things wrong, but I'll tell you one thing, that I love you. Make no mistake about that. You know, I've been taught to do an awful lot of things before I ever went my big mouth, and one thing is talk to my sponsor, and Clancy sends you his love and very best wishes. And if anybody in this room is wondering why I have a man for a sponsor and why I have Clancy for a sponsor, it's really quite simple. I did not get sober in California, got sober in a place called Lincoln, Nebraska, and was not doing well in Alcoholics Anonymous, Nebraska. I went through 19 sponsors at a rapid clip, and I'm certainly not proud as I stand here tonight. And thank God for the old-timers in AA, because somebody loved me enough to get my current sponsor. I tell you that my life has done nothing but totally complete challenge with all that. I absolutely adore the ground that man walks, and I talked to him a little while ago, and he said, well, get up there and share your experience, your strength, and your hope, and tell those people what it was like, what happened, what it's like now. Ignore the old-timers. They got it. They don't need your inspiration, my dear. And talk directly to those new people, the life and blood of AA. And I believe as I stand here, and I welcome you, and I hope that you stay. And then I think I did, without a doubt, the most important thing I can ever do. And that's to say, God, please help me say what you want me to say to these people. God is very much a part of my life now, you guys. It's nice to be with me, I can guarantee you. I come from an alcoholic hell. I could not even describe it. It was so bad. And, you know, my life is real good today, and sometimes I forget how bad it was. And I can tell you, the day I got sober, I weighed 95 pounds. I was the color of squash. Had an alcoholic hepatitis. I had a liver cirrhosis. I had ruptured esophageal varices. And if you don't know what that stuff is, you don't want to know this, because you die from that kind of stuff. And I was standing on Skid Row in Lincoln, Nebraska, sucking on a bottle of Mad Dog. And if you guys haven't drank Mad Dog, I need to tell you, it's not one of your finer wines, I can assure you. I'll guarantee you one thing, that crap has never seen a grape, make no mistake about that. Literally could not believe what's going on in my life. I'd lost my children. I'd lost my husband twice. Although I really care about that, I want you to know. I'd lost my car. I'd lost my house. I destroyed every relationship I'd ever had with anybody. And I was clearly dying from alcoholism. Then I lost the one thing that brought me my nieceness disease. I lost my nursing license. And you guys, I love my profession. Absolutely devastated me, but not stopped me from drinking. And there's a reason for that. It's in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, because I have an obsession that somehow, someday, I'll learn to control and enjoy my drinking. The persistent addiction is astonishing, just like the book talks about, mere specific gates of insanity and death. And I'll guarantee you one thing. I was in the gates of appearance. I got almost into my coffin. And I am so grateful for Alcoholics Anonymous. As I stand here tonight, I cannot begin to tell you. And you're going to soon see why and stuff. But, you know, like I said earlier, I am delighted to be here. And I'm also glad you don't have a glass for me. You can see your speaker. I had this terrible experience on the East Coast. I was out there giving a talk. And my skirt fell off in front of 3,000 people. And they had this glass for me. You can actually see the speaker. And that makes me nervous anyway. And I had this black suit on with this wraparound skirt. And the button came. And I thought, my God, my skirt's going to fall on the floor. And it was too late. It was on the floor. But you guys, you know what? Alcoholics Anonymous has taught me to wear underwear. And thank God I had some on. It's also taught me to take action. I just picked up that skirt and kept right on talking. What else are you going to do? But, you know, I want all you guys to know I am really not a senior citizen. I'm really only 33 years old, but I was secretary of the biggest AME in the world last year, and I've aged 39 and a half years, let me tell you. But I have found out things about people I wish to hell I didn't know, if you want to know the truth. But anyway, You know, like I said earlier, my sobriety date is May 30th, 1982. It was not always my sobriety date. When I got my current sponsor, I had to change that date, and there's a reason for that. I'm one of these people that had to go out and smoke dope when I got sober. And, you know, if you're smoking marijuana in this room tonight, you're not sober now, Alcoholics Anonymous, I'll tell you about this minute. I don't want to argue about it afterwards. Ask any old-timer if you don't believe me. If I had to change my date, then by God, so do you. But yeah, I got my current sponsor, and I tried to explain to him, where I'm from in Lincoln, you can have two sobrieties, one from alcohol and one from drugs. He rather quickly pointed out to me that I was in Southern California. We have one day here to get my date changed. And I was just smart aleck when I got my current sponsor, and I said, where does the book mention pot? He said, the book does mention pot. And I said, Clancy, I have read that book. It's not talk about marijuana in that book. He said, if I find the word pot in that book, will you change your sobriety or argue with me again? And I knew I was making a bad deal, you guys, but I did it anyway. And I'll be damned if he didn't flip open the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. On the first page of Bill Wilson's story, it says, died by musket or by pot. I said, that is not what that means. He said, quite frankly, my dear, I don't care what it means. You said the book did mention pot. It does mention pot. Change your sobriety date and quit arguing me or find yourself a different sponsor. It also mentions people who are consciously and capable of being honest with themselves. Are you one of those people? No. Then shut up and change your sobriety date. So, but anyway, I am really glad to be here. Clancy and myself and Peggy Martin were here about 12 years ago, if I remember correctly. And I got to tell you guys this funny story. Apparently, there's somewhere around here, Jackson Mills, somewhere around this place within a 100-mile radius is a place where they reenact the Civil War. Am I right about that? But anyway, I can't remember the name of the place, but my sponsor loves this kind of stuff. He loves Civil War stuff. And so he told Peggy and I, the committee wants us to get up at 5 o'clock in the morning. The committee wants us, that's the key word here, to get up at 5 o'clock in the morning, and we're going to go out there and reenact the Civil War. And Peggy and I said, we don't want to do that. And he said, I don't care what you want to do. You're going to do it. The committee wants us to. And the committee didn't want us to do that. It was Clancy's idea. But anyway, we had to give it 5 o'clock in the morning. We had to drive out to this place, wherever it was. And oh, Christ, it was just disgusting. But anyway, you have to wear these paper uniforms, and they shoot you with water cannonballs, you know. And it was cold outside. I think it was your winter conference. It was cold outside. And Clancy shot Peggy and I both in the back with this great big ball that exploded. You know, the water went all over. But anyway, I don't know why I had to tell that story. I just thought you might want to hear it. But anyway. Anyway, you know, I grew up in Lincoln, Nebraska. I come from a home there in Nebraska, and I want you to know that, and my mother wants you to know it too, I'll guarantee you that. You know, my mom died 14 years ago, and God, I miss her so much I can't begin to tell you guys. And boy, you only get one, folks, and when they're gone, they're gone. And I made amends to her many, many years ago. We had a wonderful relationship last year of her life and stuff, but I just missed her terribly, and I could tell you guys a funny story. Not that my mom died, of course. I was back in Nebraska in August, visiting my kids and my grandkids and stuff, and I told my eldest son, I'm going to Grandma's grave and put some flowers down. Where's your other grandmother buried? I wasn't there for my ex-mother-in-law's funeral. He said, well, Mom, just mark off 15 rows from Grandma's grave. There's Grandma's Lynn's grave. So I said, okay, little bitty tiny graveyard. It was overcast in Nebraska, been raining all day. Absolutely nobody was at that graveyard but me. And I told my speaker at the Rolano Club at 5:30. I really didn't move right along here. It was already 10 after 5, so I put the flowers on my mom's grave. I marked off 15 rows. There's my ex-mother-in-law's grave. I put the flowers down, and I backed up, and I found myself in an 8-foot grave, you guys, and I could not get out of that damn thing. Let me tell you, when you're in it, folks, you're not getting out of it, trust me. And I thought, how in the hell did this happen to me? Well, apparently the grave diggers in Nebraska thought, well, nobody's out here. They put a tarp up, a caution sign, a thing to hold the casket. It's basically impossible to fall in the grave. And they thought, well, nobody's going to come out here. Let's go to dinner, and we'll come back and do it later. And I come sorting over. And I thought, how am I going to get out of this? I don't wish to explain to my sponsor how I missed the Alano Club 5:30 meeting. Well, I was standing in an 8-foot grave, I got to tell you. But what do? You start screaming, help is what you're doing. About 10 minutes later, this old lady walked over the grave. She's old, but I'm not, right? And she says to me, I don't think you're supposed to be in there. And I thought, you stupid woman. I didn't say that, however. I had that one in my pocket that particular time. I said, do you got a cell phone on you by any chance? She says, you know, I don't. And I said, you go up the office and tell them, bring a ladder, call the fire department. What do they got to do to get me out of this damn grave? And I said, but tell them not to run the sirens. Nobody's heard or anything. And here they come, you guys. Look at Nebraska fire trucks with their sirens going. Think of Nebraska police cars with their sirens going. And reporters of all damn things. And I said, don't you dare put my name in the paper. And they said, we have to report the fire call. We don't put your name in the paper. And I said, you better see that you don't. There it was, Monday morning, California woman falls in 8-foot grave carrying gear. I can't believe they did that. But I'll have all you old-timers know, I made it to my meeting at 5:29 p.m. I was there. And the people said to me, Karen, why do you have muddle of your dress? I said, you don't even want to know, trust me. But you never know what's going to happen in Alcoholics Anonymous. But I come from an alcoholic home, and I don't think that's neither here nor there. I don't do well with people who stand AA podiums and blame anybody for anything. And my father died from this disease on the streets of Chicago in 1979. And you tell me how a major in the Air Force dies on Skid Row. I don't know how that happened, other than the fact that he was an alcoholic. And whether he ever found AA or not, I do not know. I just know that he certainly did not stay sober as a result of it. So one more time tonight, this is a cunning, baffling, powerful disease that kills people. This is not a game I'm playing up here. This is serious business. And I would give any in the world if my father were alive tonight, because we would have a lot to talk about, I can tell you. I have a sister who was Miss Rah-Rah in high school and homecoming queen and cheerleader and all that kind of stuff, and made straight A's, never cracked a book, and I made straight F's, never cracked a book, and that was the difference. My sister was a beautiful little girl. She's a gorgeous woman today. She looks nothing like I do, I got to tell you. And she was a model for many, many years for Neiman Marcus in Dallas, and now she's retired and teaches school in the West Indies. And I got to tell you guys, as a direct result of this program, I love my sister very, very much tonight. And I found out something about her. She's also very beautiful on the inside, too, and I never used to know that. I have a brother who's a fighter pilot in the Navy for many, many years. My brother retired 7 years ago, and right before 9/11 and so forth, and because of 9/11 Iraq, and he's been called back in the service. And, you know, my brother is really old to be a fighter pilot, you guys. He's 54 years old, and we were growing up, I thought he was such a dork, I can't begin to tell you. Straight as an arrow, Mike, doesn't drink, doesn't use drugs, doesn't screw around. He was an embarrassment, if you know the truth, but tonight I'm so proud of that man, I cannot begin to tell you. You wouldn't catch me over Iraq in any fighter plane, but neither one of these people are alcoholic. And I have another sister who's married the public defender in Lincoln, Nebraska, who got me out of a whole bunch of trouble when I got sober, and I'm welcome in their homes today than I ever used to be. I come from basically a very boring family, if you know the truth. They're high successful people, and they bore me to tears. I love them, but they bore me to tears. And I have a couple of kids who are 45 and 46 years old, and I know I certainly don't look old enough to have kids at that age, but by God, I sure do. And this is where it really starts getting interesting for me. These kids are anything but boring, I got to tell you guys. As a matter of fact, there are a couple of jerks, to know the truth, but those couple of jerks have given me five of the most gorgeous grandbabies you've ever seen before in your life, and those grandbabies have never seen their grandmother drink, and I hope to God they never do. So things in my family are very, very good tonight. It is only a direct result of this program, I can assure you, and it took a long time for it to happen. You know, in my case, that's a good thing, but, you know, I was a disruptive jerk when I was growing up, always in trouble, kicked out of classrooms. I hated discipline. I was very, very rebellious. I literally hated people telling me what to do, and I like it even less today, if you know the truth. And, you know, I never felt like I belonged anywhere. And I hear that a lot from AA podiums, and I'm right on with that 125%, I got to tell you. You know, I really don't remember my first drink, you guys, but I can tell you, I remember what my first drink did for me. I could do anything I wanted to do. I could drink, be anything I wanted to be, and I drank at any given opportunity after that, and I was probably about 13 years old. You know, I realize that I'm in need of Alcoholics Anonymous tonight, and I honor this podium by talking about alcoholism. I used a lot of drugs to make that a small part of my story. My sponsoring encourages me to do that. And, you know, in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous and Bill Wilson's story, he talks about and the powerful influence of alcohol and sedation. He wound up on the rocks. That's precisely what happened to me, folks. But, you know, I'm one of these alcoholic females, and I hate to say this from an AA podium, but it's precisely the way that it was for me, and we're supposed to tell the truth up here, that if you pat me on the head, my pants fall if that happens to me. And I got myself into a lot of trouble when I was growing up. I absolutely love men. I love everything about them. You name about and I love them. The downfall of my entire existence, and they remain the same today, I'm sorry to say. And I particularly like sick men. There's a room full of them here tonight. I can just feel it. That's one thing, girls, I love about Southern California. It's got so many sick men, and I'm just entertained around the clock 24 hours a day. And I have to tell you guys a funny story. I was in Nashville, Tennessee, maybe about 15, 16 years ago, giving a talk, and one of the fine ladies of Nashville, Tennessee, AA, walked up to me afterwards, I want you to know, and this woman said to me, she said, "You're disgusting," is what she said to me. And she wasn't kidding you guys. She meant every word of it. And I said, "Lady, from where I come from, being disgusting is a step up, I can assure you. And furthermore, if I wanted you to sponsor me, I'd phone to Nashville and ask you." You know, I hear some women get this podium, and I wonder if they ever drank, you guys. I really do. Do all the drinking ones that shoot it into the keyhole with an eyedropper. I was out there big time. I got myself into a lot of trouble. I've been taught to share it free in Alcoholics Anonymous. And if I offend anybody in this room tonight, I would never offend anybody in the program that saved my life. And besides that, my book tells me, and this is my favorite part of our book, it says, "Cling to the thought that in God's hands your dark past will be the greatest possession that you have." And it goes on to say, "Because you can literally avert death and misery for others." So I thought it would be very, very true in my sobriety. So if I offend anybody here, not I want to hear about it afterwards. But anyway, I got pregnant when I was 16 years old, and I had to get married. In my day, girls, you had to get married. There was no ifs, ands, and buts about that. That's just what we did and stuff. And as it must be, I married an alcoholic. He was 17. I was 16. I couldn't cook. I couldn't clean. I couldn't take care of a baby, nor did I want to take care of a baby. And before we know it, we had two babies to take care of. And yeah, I tell you, I found out real quick what caused all that, and I put a halt to it. But anyway, you know, somebody in that family had to get a job. And I found a job as a nurse's aide at a hospital there in Lincoln. And the magic was put in my life. I literally fell in love with nursing. And I made a plan on myself. I would love to go to school, and I'd love to become a registered nurse. That's what I'd love to do. You know, they say that alcoholics don't have willpower. And I'm here to tell you tonight from this podium that that is a bunch of crap. I have more willpower than 20 elephants. When I want to do well, I'm going to do well. I don't have 1 ounce of willpower when it comes to my disease. But by God, when I want to do something, I'm going to do it. And I went back. I finished junior high. I finished high school. I went to college full-time for 3 years, and I worked full-time for 3 years. And I'm talking about 18, 20 hours a day, you guys, and that is hard stuff to do. I didn't drink. I didn't use any drugs during this period of time. At the age of 27 years old, I became a registered nurse. And if you think I'm proud to stand here tonight and tell you that I got jerked in front of the State Board of Nursing in Nebraska, and they tell me, you are a disgrace to your profession, you're a disgrace to nursing, you're a disgrace to medicine, you are no longer working because we just jerked your nursing license. If you think I'm proud of that, you are sadly wrong. You guys, I love my profession. I really, really mean that. And I would never do anything to jeopardize the people I take care of, nor the people that I work with in ordinary circumstances. And what I have to tell you now is a story about how I threw it right down the toilet so I could drink. And that is total insanity. It's also called alcoholism. At the age of 27 years old, I divorced this man. And girls, I got to tell you that a whole new world opened up to me, and it's called men and alcohol. And I went absolutely hog wild is what I did. I was engaged 8 times during that divorce. I never even married these people. 2 of them died from alcoholism. I know nothing about social drinking. I drank, ran with alcoholics, and we do indeed die from this. And at the age of 27 years old, I went to work in surgery at a hospital there in Lincoln, and I had that job for 19 years. I love working in the operating room. I love taking care of those patients. It's a colorful, exciting nursing position. I drank with medical people mostly. They were colorful, intense people. They worked hard, and they played hard. And I need to tell you guys that the incidence of alcoholism amongst my profession is tremendously high. And that I do a lot for your security level. You're going to have surgery next week. That has to be very, very true. And those people are so grateful that I'm sober that they can't see straight. And I'm talking about alcoholics is what I'm talking about. You know, in our book, Alcoholics Anonymous, it says clearly that we're telling the general way what our drinking was like. And I could tell you guys about my drinking in about 5 seconds, flat, you know the truth. Many, many years ago, I was at a little concert in upstate New York called Woodstock. And I'm not talking about that piece of crap they had 10 years ago. I'm talking about the real Woodstock. There will never be another one, trust me on that. The kids from the 60s threw a party that nobody will ever match, I'm quite sure. And New York got wind they're going to have this big event. And they told these people, if you don't get medical coverage, you are not going to have this concert. Started hiring people from Nebraska, but more responsible. And we were a seedy lot, I can assure you. And I was the first drunk to sign up this deal. And my 9 girls I worked with to join me, and met about 80 doctors from New York. They were at Woodstock. I never seen so much alcohol in place in my entire life. You could have easily filled a bathroom, no problem whatsoever. And the drugs, it was like a candy store. And everybody was sharing, our drugs with everybody else. But we had this great big semi-truck on that back lot of Woodstock. That was our hospital park back there. And I don't recall being that semi the entire week. But I do recall when Richie Havens standing on the stage, when Richie Havens singing, and Joe Cocker and Country Joe and Santana's groups that I love. I come from the roaring 60s, you guys, and I love rock and roll, let me tell you. Things have not changed in my life in a little tiny bit. I loved Elvis Presley, and Janis Joplin was my lady, let me tell you. Wouldn't Janis Joplin have been a fine member of Alcoholics Anonymous, you guys? I'd have hung out with Janis, let me tell you. I traded Janis for Clancy any day of the week, if you know the truth, but... That is a big fat lie. Did not tell him I said that, please. I was just kidding. I wouldn't trade my sponsor for 20 Janis Joplins, but drinking for me at one time was a fun thing, you guys. If you'd like me to stand out and say anything but that, but I cannot remember the fun, I remember the pain that it caused me. And one more time, I am so grateful. Alcoholics Anonymous, I cannot begin to tell you. And you know, the drunk driving charges, the bad checks, all the stuff that we do. And you know, I divorced this guy when I was 27 years old, went through all these engagements, never did get married and stuff. And, you know, I was getting myself into a lot of trouble. And my kids were in trouble. And I thought, you know, I need to get married to my ex-husband again. That's what I need to do. The kids need their father. Besides, I need to get even with him for all the things that he's done to me. And those are not very good reasons to get married again, I got to tell you. And I'm certainly not proud of it as I stand here tonight. And, you know, if anybody in this room is thinking about getting married to the same person twice, don't do it. You're going to be sorry. The only way I can describe it is like taking a bite out of the same turd twice. I'm sorry, but that's the way I feel. And he feels the same way I do, as a matter of fact. But I danced that man through 3 of the most miserable years of his life on the face of this earth, and I love to tell this story. I'd love to tell you guys this story, but I tell you, my sponsor always tells me that is not funny, and you should not be telling that from AA podiums. I said, okay, fine, then I won't tell anymore. He said, no, go ahead and tell those people see how sick you really were, and apparently how sick you really still are. And I'm still sick, and I still think it's funny, and I'm telling the story. When I married him again, I told him, I said, if you ever hit me again, buddy, I will kill you next time you hit me. And he said, I'll never hit you again ever. And I said, you better see that you don't. And he lied is what he did. Came home drunk one night, and I happened to be sober this night for some reason, and I'll never know why, because I usually wasn't. And girls, you know what guys do when they come home drunk? They want to take you to bed and stuff, and I was not buying it. If there's anything I can't stand, it's some drunk man mauling me when I'm sober. Really? I will say that when the shoe's under the foot, though, it's fine with me. And that guy came home and indicated that to me. And I said, you get your hands off me and leave me alone. I wanted nothing to do with him, period. And he broke my arm is what he did. And I'm here to tell you guys that I was pissed. As a matter of fact, I'm still pissed about it, you know the truth. And I told him, I said, you go to sleep on that couch and so help me God, when you wake up, you're going to wish you'd never been born. He said it for hours, you guys, his eyes pried open. As it must be, he finally passed out. And I started drinking martinis, and this is a classic example of what alcohol did for me. Alcohol told me what to do. I didn't tell it what to do. And I had about 8-10 martinis, and I was feeling no pain, I can assure you. And I was sitting there watching this guy. And I hate to tell you what this man was doing, but I can't tell you the strength to tell you what he was doing. He was laying on the couch playing with himself. I thought, you disgusting man, you make me sick to my stomach. And the more I drank, the madder I got. And you guys, you know, I'm a nurse, and I'm very familiar with male anatomy. And I'd be very familiar with male anatomy if I wasn't a nurse. But I thought to myself, what can I do to get even with this guy for all the things he's done to me? And I came with this brilliant idea in my drunken stupor. That's one thing we should never do, folks, is drink and think at the same time. And this is many, many years ago, you guys, when super glue first came out. And super glue was powerful stuff. You know, our country in the last 4 or 5 years has been 2 or 3 instances of super glue stuff. I'm the original super glue person. I wear it like a badge of honor, for God's sake. But I got that super glue, and I read the directions on that super glue. And like I said, I was drunk, and I wasn't seeing very clearly. And what I thought those directions said were, if this hits human skin, you better get it off in 15 hours. Now, why would it say something stupid like that? What it said was, in fact, if this hits human skin, you better get it off in 5 minutes, is what it said. And I went, this guy, I get so excited when I tell this story, I could just do it all over again. This guy, and I poured super glue all over this guy's groin, and I mean everywhere. There's not one place man to have super glue, and I laughed about it, and I went to bed. And I woke up in the morning to screams of horror like you cannot even believe it. You know, I didn't mean to hurt this guy as bad as I did, and I swear to God that's true, but I'll tell you what happened to my ex-husband. This guy never had the advantage of being circumcised when he was born, and now he clearly was, I can assure you. It was terrible. And we had a telephone by our bed there in our bedroom, Lincoln. He called the police, and the cops were out in front of our home with their sirens going. There was an ambulance out there. The neighbors were gawking out of their windows. And, you know, one thing you guys got to keep in mind here, they do not see things like this happen in Lincoln, Nebraska. In California, it would not surprise me one bit, but certainly not there. And the cops were laughing, which maybe the whole thing was funny. And they said, lady, are you crazy or what? Why would you do something like this? And I stood there, and I said, what makes you think that I did it anyway? I was only standing there with glue on my hands, for God's sake. And they said, you're under arrest for assault and battery. And I said, you cannot arrest wives in Nebraska for assault and battery against their husbands. I knew better than that. And 2 days later, when I got out of jail, I guess I didn't know better than that. And they took that man to the very hospital that I worked at in surgery, and he had to have surgery. And one more time, the whole staff saw what Karen did, and they took me to jail, I my dad. It turned out to be a terrible, terrible thing. Those doctors there in Lincoln couldn't get that glue off, and they had to get 2 surgeons down from Creighton University Medical School in Omaha, Nebraska to get that glue off. And you know, there's a paper written about that at Creighton, and this room's going to go to medical school. You can read about it if you want to. I'd always wanted a paper written about me, but not like this, I got to tell you. And I was sitting in that jail thinking to myself, I am getting out of this marriage. When this guy comes home from the hospital, he's going to glue something to mine shut. And he would have, too. I'm sorry, but he would have. For those who don't know this, that happened to a lady in Kentucky about 6 years ago. It was on the national news, and I was on the 10 freeway. I had a wreck when I heard it. I thought, my God, better here than me, I got to tell you. But, you know, we have an amends step in this program, and my sponsor made me get on an airplane and fly to Sacramento, California, and make amends to my ex-husband. And I tried to tell my sponsor, I'm not sorry that I did that. Therefore, I don't have to make the amends. He said, I don't give a damn whether you're sorry or not. Get in the airplane, get there, and do what I'm asking you to do, and maybe one of these days you will be sorry. And I'll tell you, but in this room tonight, when that guy sees me, he kind of backs up, let me tell you. But we were able to sit down and talk and stuff, and I made my amends to him. And I will tell you guys, I walked away from that man. I was free what I had done to him. I was free of being married to him twice. And I will tell you, for the first time in my sobriety, the promise of the Biblical Alcoholics Anonymous came true in my life. And you know what else I found about that? Motives mean nothing here, folks. My motives sucked big time on that one. I still got the promises, so go figure. It's action that counts around here, not motives and stuff. But anyway, I divorced this guy one more time. Oh, I have to tell you guys a funny story. I went up to Lompoc Prison to speak about 5 years ago. As we all know, it's a men's federal penitentiary in Central Coast, California, and they have this monthly speakers meeting, so they invite folks from L.A. to drive up and share. So I went to Santa Maria and drove up there, and you have to go out to the Lompoc property, out to the guard tower, and push the button, and they say, who are you, and what is your business? And I told them, they said, Mrs. Garrison, do you have any weapons on you, any guns, knives, explosives? And I said, no. And they said, well, Mrs. Garrison, do you have any super glue on you? For the first time in my life, I was totally speechless, you know. They're in the guard tower laughing. The prisoners put them up to it and stuff. And I said, well, no, as a matter of fact, I don't. They said, well, you can come on in. And the prisoners took me to the meeting room. They had this big blackboard with this great big circle with a red slash and said, no super glue in here tonight. You never know what's going to happen, Alcoholics Anonymous. But anyway, I got involved with the most bizarre man I've ever met before in my life. This guy told me he was in the mafia. Now, I don't think anybody in Lincoln, Nebraska is in the mafia, for God's sakes. And I was lying to him, and he was lying to me. It was a typical alcoholic nightmare is what it was. I was drinking on a daily basis. I was taking Valium for severe tremors I was starting to have. It was beginning to be no more fun, I got to tell you guys. You know, I'm a nurse, and I've studied alcoholism. I knew all about before I became one. It shows me one more time tonight what our book says is so true. Self-knowledge avails us nothing to this disease. It's action that counts. Nowhere in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous do we have a chapter called Into Thinking. We do have one that's called Into Action. And that's the only reason I'm standing here 26 years sober. And the day came into the hospital to tell me, they said, Karen, you know what? You are absolutely pathetic. You are the finest nurse on this staff. You have won awards for your nursing ability. What is the matter with you? You have a drinking problem. We're tired of about you in the paper. Drunk driving charges, bad checks, gluing husbands, all the crap that you're doing. Everything you do in Nebraska is in the paper, I'm sorry to say. And they knew my game, let me change. They said, either going to a treatment center or you are out of here. We are not protecting you anymore. It's either treatment or you are gone. We're not doing nothing for you anymore. And I said, you and what army is going to make me go to a treatment center? And I walked out of a job that I love more than anything in the whole world. And I cannot say that enough tonight. And I drank and I drank and I died 1,000 times over. I went to work in a nursing home there in Lincoln. What I'm ready to share with you guys is something I am not proud to discuss from any AA podium. It took me years of my sobriety before I would ever mention this. I found myself still in drugs in that nursing home. And I did not do it because I like drugs. I just want to make that clear. I did it for withdrawal symptoms. And I will tell you, I couldn't drink at work, so I started stealing narcotics. It's just that damn simple. And I was stealing morphine and Demerol and cocaine and Valium. I get my hands on. And if you think I'm proud of that, you are sadly wrong. And the day came and the people that ran that place came up to me, and they said, Karen, what is wrong with you? You are just weird is what you are. You know, you take good care of the patients. You're a great nurse, but you're just strange. And I remember thinking to myself, you'd be strange, too, if you had 200 milligrams of Demerol on board. You'd be strange, too. And I threw my keys at them and walked out the door before they fired me. And I went to work at Bryan Memorial Hospital there in Lincoln. And you guys, it's a fine, fine facility. And I was drunk on that interview about that nursing position. And I'm not talking about falling down drunk. I was just maintaining a certain level of alcohol in my bloodstream that I would not shake and have those violent tremors. That is clearly desperation drinking. Our book describes it vividly. And I was in hot water up to my yin-yang, let me tell you. I had to drink. I had to take drugs. I had no more choice than any of it. And I will tell you guys right up front here tonight, the very thought that I might drink again makes the hair on my neck stand straight up. And that's why I'm an active member of Alcoholics Anonymous and stuff. And the day came when I got caught red-handed and stealing some morphine from the hospital. And this has got to be, without a doubt, the most humiling day of my entire life. When they say, you give us your narcotic keys and you get out of this hospital, don't you ever walk back in here again. We're reporting this to the State Board of Nursing in Nebraska. That's exactly what they did. That's exactly what they should have done. My three jobs should have done it too, as a matter of fact. And long story short here tonight, I lost my nursing license. And to make a long story shorter and shorter here tonight, I wound up on the streets of Nebraska is what happened to me. And you guys, I spent 2 years on the streets. And I've traveled the Midwest. I've prostituted myself. And I'll guarantee you one thing, that I have seen and done things that no woman should ever see or do. And I'm still so sick in the head sometimes I think to myself, I wouldn't mind seeing some of them again, you know. And my sponsor assures me I am still a very ill member of Alcoholics Anonymous. But I've been in nut houses. I've been in detoxes. I've been in jails. I've been in institutions. I cannot think of a thing on the streets as a practicing female alcoholic. Things happen to me I would not repeat in this podium tonight, but I'm sure that you had the general idea. And 2 years rolled by for me, and there I was back there in Lincoln, standing on Skid Row, sucking on a bottle of Mad Dog. and I certainly have better things intended for myself than to be doing that, let me tell you. I will never forget that last day of my drinking as long as I live, and I hope to God it was the last day of my drinking. I apparently was so physically sick I just passed down the streets is what happened, but before that happened, there was a Hilton Hotel adjacent to that Skid Row area, and I remember thinking to myself, you know, 2 years ago I used to stand on top of the Hilton Hotel and drink martinis with surgeons. What am I doing standing on Skid Row drinking with these people? And I rather imagine those folks felt the same way when they arrived there, and like I said, I can't tell you much about it at all. I woke up in an intensive care ward at the very hospital I was born at, the very hospital that I worked at for 19 years, and I will tell you guys clearly that the alcoholic hell for me started the day I got sober. You know, I'm not a very big person. I only weighed 95 pounds when I got sober, and I was coming off a quarter whatever a day and 200 milligrams of Valium a day. That is a lot of booze, that's a lot of pills, and I had a lot of dying, let me tell you. You know, they say that most alcohol withdrawal is over in 3 days, and maybe it is for some people. It certainly was not for me. It's going to be a long, long time for us to start feeling better. I laid in that intensive care ward. I had tubes come out of my belly that were draining fluid off my liver. I had IVs going, and I found myself in withdrawal that was so bad I cannot begin to tell you guys. And I laid in that intensive care ward, and I shook, and I shook, and I died, and I died for 30 solid days. And I'd scream at those nurses, demand they give me drugs for this withdrawal. They would not give me drug one. There's nothing wrong with your heart. It's not throwing any irregularities. You need to fill one of those tremors, and maybe you'll never do it again. And I did not want to hear that, let me tell you. But let me tell you what these people did for me, and I will be forever grateful as long as I'm sober in Alcoholics Anonymous. They got 10 members of AA to come and sit with me. And, you know, I just want to say something very quickly because I feel so strongly about this because it saved my life. Once in a while in AA, I hear people say, not very many people, I don't hear that often. When I hear it, I want to throttle them by the neck. They say things like, we don't go unless the alcoholic calls us. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm standing here 26 years sober tonight. I never made any damn phone call. Where'd that crap come from? It's good enough for our co-founders. By God, it's good enough for us. I think Bill found Bob, as the story goes. I don't think Bob found Bill. I hope I never forget where I'm coming from here. And my responsibility statement does indeed say, when anyone anywhere reaches out for help, we want the hand of AA always to be there. And for that, I'm responsible. The nurses reached out, the alcoholics responded, and I have to believe it's a direct result that I'm standing here 26 years sober tonight. But anyway, I just fell in love with these people, and I'll tell you why. There was not one person in my life that was speaking to me. And for the first time in a long time, people were talking to me again. They say things like, Karen, just keep breathing. So all you do is breathe. And I say, when is this withdrawal going to stop? And they said, when it's time, that's when it's going to stop. And that wasn't good enough for me. I wanted a date is what I wanted. And they were absolutely accurate about that. When it's time, it's time. And at 30 days of sobriety, I walked in the official treatment room of that hospital. I'm a product of a treatment center. I had no opinion on one way or the other, but apparently I went to a fine one because all they talked about was Alcoholics Anonymous. And boy, there's a lot of bad ones out there, you guys, let me tell you, and thank God I went to a good one. And let me tell you what I was like when I was 30 days sober. I needed you so desperately on day one that 30 days later was a whole different ballgame, and you started telling me what to do and stuff. And, you know, when I went through treatment, a lot of people got kicked out of treatment for fraternizing. I didn't. Nobody wants to fraternize with an orange person, I can assure you. And they used to bring the patients over to the hospital, and they'd say, look at her. See what's going to happen if you keep on drinking? Look at her. I thought, how dare you even fill my room and say stuff like that? But you guys, you know what? In retrospect tonight, I'm really glad they did that. I get to think about that before I pick up any drink. But I was on a quick study in the inpatient 30-day program due to my very rotten behavior. I was in there for 7 long months. That's a long time to be in an inpatient 30-day program. But I completed that inpatient program. I went to an outpatient program. I went to an evening care program. I went to an aftercare program. And I found myself a very, very active member of Alcoholics Anonymous in Lincoln, Nebraska. And I wasn't doing one thing where you teach people in AA to do it. I would tell the new people, you don't need to read the book, and you don't need a sponsor. We can do whatever you do around here. This is an individual program. And needless to say, I was not real popular with the old-timers in Lincoln, Nebraska. And, you know, you can pull your crap out here just for so long, and these old-timers are going to start nailing you one right at the other. God love them, you know, old-timers and Alcoholics Anonymous. They literally saved my life. And, boy, they are dying off right and left, I got to tell you guys. And they have taught me well. And I'll be eternally grateful. But this old guy with 29 years of sobriety grabbed me with an amen day, and he said, come outside, I want to talk to you. He said, you stay away from the new people. How dare you tell the new people in AA they don't need to read the book and they don't need a sponsor? He said, you're like a typhoid Mary in AA. Everybody dies around you, but you're able to stay sober somehow. He said, you stay away from new people. He went on to tell me, there's going to be a man from California speaking in Kearney, Nebraska this weekend. His name is Clancy. You're going to go up and hear this man speak and ask this man if he will sponsor you. He is a master at dealing with jerks like you. And I'd heard all about Clancy, and I wanted nothing to do with him, period, because I knew I was going to be in bad, bad trouble. And I got to tell you guys that my fears have been justified 8,000 times over, but... Excuse me. I told this old timer, I said, who do you think you are that you're going to tell me you're going to be my sponsor in Alcoholics Anonymous? He said, if you don't get in that car and go this Saturday, I'm going to tell everybody in Lincoln how you stole money from an AA meeting. And I'll guarantee I was in that car going to Kearney, Nebraska. And I paid that money back, too, by the way. I did pay it. I did. And I will tell you guys from a podium in Kearney, Nebraska, that man literally put the magic of Alcoholics Anonymous in my life. My life has never been the same since that talk. And there's a reason for that. For the first time in my sobriety, I was identifying with another alcoholic. And as I understand Alcoholics Anonymous, that's what this thing is all about. I know of no finer speaker in the world than my sponsor. I'm not saying that you need to believe that. It's only important that I believe that. But in that talk, I wanted that man for my sponsor. That, ladies and gentlemen, is how God works in my life. I wouldn't have asked that man to sponsor me in a million years. Trust me, I wouldn't have asked him. Apparently, God does something I can't do for myself. I found myself walking across that convention floor, asked that man to be my sponsor. And he looked at me and he said, I don't sponsor crazy people like you. And that's a lie anyway. He sponsors people crazy I never thought of being. And I thought to myself, what'd he say that to me for? He doesn't even know me. And I was in my little white dress on, my little white gloves on, acting like an angel. And I wasn't aware of the fact this old-timer had called him 2 weeks prior to him coming to Nebraska and asked me if he brought me, if he would talk to me. He said, of course I will. And he knew my game, let me tell you. And he said, Karen, I don't just sponsor people on long-distance basis, but I'm going to do this for you. Because I don't do it for you, you'll probably go die somewhere. But he said, I'm going to tell you something, little girl, and you better listen to me real good because I'm going to say it one time and one time only. You're going to call me every day. I tell you not to call me every day. You are going to read that book. You're going to sponsor people, become an active volunteer back like Snomish. You're not going to argue with me, defend your actions to me. You're going to do what I ask you to do. And if you don't want to do that, then get yourself a different sponsor. And you guys, you want to talk about we stood at the turning point. This is the day of my recovery, really beginning of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I said two words that I almost fell over when I said them. I said, yes, sir. I don't tell people, yes, sir. Trust me, I don't. More time, God do if I can't do for myself. Respect's got to start for me somewhere. You might as well start with my sponsor now, Alcoholics Anonymous. And I went back to Lincoln. I became very, very active in the right way. One of my sponsors, a lot of women in that town. I am not bragging about that. It is not that much fun to sponsor 56 crazy women in Alcoholics Anonymous, but I grew to love those women very, very much, and I'll tell you why. They literally showed me the first 4 years of my sobriety what to do and what not to do in this program, and every one of those women are still sober today, with the exception of one. And she died in a car accident when she was 13 years sober. But she died sober, you guys, and it wasn't because of me. They were active members of Alcoholics Anonymous. And one of the first directions my sponsor gave me, I want you to get that nursing license back. And I tried to tell this man, I cannot get that kind of humiliation. He said, Karen, are you arguing with me? And I said, no. He said, get the State Board of Nursing Nebraska and tell those people you've been sober in AA for a year and a half, you'd like the opportunity to get your nursing license back. And you guys, I knew it wasn't going to work, but I did it anyway. And that's without a doubt the most important thing I can say in this room tonight. I did what my sponsor asked me to do, whether I thought it would work or not, and I asked for my license back. And they looked at me like I had just grown horns on the top of my head, I can assure you. And they said, how many links are you willing to go to? And I had to do a lot, you guys. I had to take crap off people for 2 years that I wouldn't hire to mow my own lawn, if you know the truth. And I had to keep my mouth shut in the process too. And one of the happiest days of my life occurred 22 years ago when one more time I was jerked in front of the State Board of Nursing Nebraska, and what they told me brought me to my knees for the first time in Alcoholics Anonymous. They said, welcome home, you're fully reinstated as a registered nurse. And that is a gift from AA. I don't deserve it, but by God, I intend to take it. I went to California to visit a couple of times. I fell in love with Southern California AA, and I found myself telling my sponsor on the phone one day, I want to move to LA, live on that crazy Venice Beach with all those crazy people, live on the Pacific Group, work at UCLA in the operating room, be on two of their transplant teams, their heart and liver transplant teams. I want this and I want that. And every single thing has come true for me. And those are all gifts from AA. I deserve absolutely none of it, but by God, I'm taking all of it. And you know, one of the first directions my sponsor gave me, actually it wasn't really a direction, he was sure. He said, you know, Karen, he said, you know, Alcoholics Anonymous in its entirety is a spiritual program. Where are you doing? What are you doing that year? Are you praying at all? And I think that was on day two that I had Clancy. And he said, I said, no, I'm not going to pray. I don't believe in God, and I'm not going to do it. He said, would you like to get yourself a different sponsor? I said, no. And he said, get on your knees in the morning and get on your knees at night and you pray for God's will. I don't care what you believe. I said, do it. Just keep doing it until I tell you to stop doing it, which will be never. So there, just start doing it. And he said, and he flipped open my book, the big book, and he says, he pointed out to me where I get a daily reprieve contingent on the spiritual maintenance of the power greater than myself. And he said, there's going to come a day in your sobriety when I can't help you and AA can't help you, and you have better well have a God in your life and be dead from the disease of alcoholism. And I said, okay, what do you want me to do? He said, I just told you what to do. Now start doing it. And, you know, I had Clancy for 4 years long distance before I moved out to California, but every day I'd tell him on the phone, this is not working for me. I don't feel any connection with God. And he said, Karen, are you staying sober one day at a time in Alcoholics Anonymous? I said, well, you know that I am. He said, that's the point of the whole thing. Are you stupid or what? I wasn't playing with the full deck when I arrived here. It took me a long, long time to get those little simple things. And in 1985, I found myself in Montreal, Canada, at the World Conference of Alcoholics Anonymous. If you guys haven't experienced a World Conference, I will see you all in San Antonio in the year 2010, and something that none of us should ever miss and stuff. But I drove straight from Lincoln, Nebraska with five alcoholic women and myself, six alcoholic women quack, quack, quacking the whole way. I would never do it again in a million years, trust me, but Jesus Christ. We only had $100 apiece. We had no place to stay. We sure couldn't fly. But by God, we were going to that world conference. We had to sleep outside we were going. So we got the convention center. We found an apartment to rent for the whole week for $100. I could not believe our good luck. And I found myself in a great big football stadium at that Friday night meeting. And there was 65,000 sober alcoholics in that football stadium. And I was in awe of Alcoholics Anonymous, in absolute awe of this program. Down in the football field, they were practicing for a flag ceremony. And, you know, I know if you're new here tonight, this all sounds real hokey to the new people, but the longer I stay sober, the cornier I get for some reason. But anyway, alcoholics from all the world carrying their national flags. And you guys, I'm from Nebraska, and I was impressed, let me tell you. And I'm impressed to have people from all the world in Alcoholics Anonymous. And my sponsor was helping them direct that flag ceremony and ran down to tell him hi. And it just made people from all over the world in AA. And you guys, like I said, I'm from Nebraska, and I was impressed. And I ran back up to join my friends, and that flag ceremony started. And I will never forget this as long as I live. I will never forget this. When the United States of America's flag touched the turf of that stadium, I saw 65,000 sober alcoholics go absolutely crazy. I looked around myself. I did not see one dry eye in that football stadium. I saw those old-timers sitting around, all the new people, and all the people in between. And they all seemed to be loving this thing so very, very much. And I remember saying to myself, why can't I feel what these people are feeling, you know? And for the first time in my life, I got tears in my eyes. I did not try and stop. And for the first time with any amount of sincerity whatsoever, I said, God, thank you for getting me here. Please help me to stay here. Please help me to love this program as much as these people do. And I will tell you guys, in a foreign country, in a foreign land, I came to believe in a power greater than myself by watching and being with the people in Alcoholics Anonymous. I really believe the old adage that we see when we're ready to see, we hear when we're ready to hear, not before. I also believe the actions my sponsor gave me got me to that point. It's like, do it till you believe it. Just keep on doing it and stuff. But for one solid second, my world stopped. And I remember that woman who was standing on Skid Row in Lincoln, Nebraska, who literally could not get sober, who literally could not quit drinking. And there she was, 2.5 years sober. You know, I personally believe that Alcoholics Anonymous is divinely inspired. How could anybody be around here as long as I have and not believe that? I think our book's divinely inspired. I think the whole thing is divinely inspired. But anyway, you know, I pray to that God every day sincerely since, because I believe my sponsor has taught me. I get a daily reprieve, and that's all I get. You guys, I have a fabulous job at UCLA. I've been there for many, many years and stuff, and I'm on two of the transplant teams, the heart liver transplant teams. And I could tell you a story that happened to me about 14 years ago. So many people here tonight have asked me to tell this story, and thank you so much, and I get to relive it all over again and stuff. But I actually love to tell it anyway, but then I get to relive it again. But, you know, my sponsor has taught me. He said, Karen, you have got to do what's in front of you. Yeah, I asked Clancy one time, I said, what is God's will? He said, how the hell am I supposed to know? I'm not God. He said, I have to believe that when I'm doing what's in front of me, what's on my plate, what God gives me to do. And I thought, what are you talking about? I did not have a clue, you guys. He said, just answer the damn phone when it rings, in your case. Just pick up the phone and answer when it rings. You know, I, to this day, do not screen my phone calls. If I am home, the phone gets answered, period. But anyway, and I know the value of it as I stand here tonight, and I'm going to share that with you. But so anyway, I started answering that telephone under all conditions. And, you know, it took me a long time to get a phone in Alcoholics Anonymous. By the time I got one, I sure didn't want to answer it. It was bill collectors. There's a direct result of answering that telephone. I'm $86,000 out of debt in Alcoholics Anonymous. So I know this thing works, you guys, but you got to do it for it to work, I got to tell you. But anyway, about 14 years ago, we had a terrible nursing crisis in Southern California, and we were working our butts off, let me tell you. You know, like we're too hungry, angry, lonely, or tired. I was a bitch is what I was. But this, you know, we do most of our transplants at night over there and stuff because of organ availability and so forth. But anyway, this one particular night I had off, and I'd worked 72 hours this one particular week, and I was just whipped, you guys. But and I went to meet early, you know, I went home and I went to bed early, and the phone rang about 2 o'clock in the morning. I thought, I am not answering that phone. It's either my boss want me to come to work or somebody I sponsor wanted to whine about something. I'm not picking up the phone. I deserve a night off. And my head told me, pick up that damn phone. Somebody's in trouble. You know better than that. And I'm so glad I answered that phone. You guys, the most precious thing happened. And sure enough, it was my boss. I got 18 people sick over here tonight. We're going to do a liver transplant. Little girl that's about 3 years old. I have nobody to do it. Now get over here and help me. I know you work 70 hours, Karen. I don't want to hear it. I need you to come over here right this minute. And the phone went dead. You know, I was going to call my sponsor, but I'm going to talk to him about nothing at 2 o'clock in the morning. I knew what he told me. Nobody ever died from lack of sleep, Karen, on his way back to bed. I just went to work, and I'm so glad I did. And I go to UCLA, and I sent my orderly upstairs to get a little patient, bring him down to surgery. We had a jet came from New York for the liver for this child. Had some time to kill and stuff. And And so he called me in the back and he said, "You're not going to believe all the people in this family." And I thought, well, that's nice if they had the support. I was so crabby, you guys. He said, "Karen, there's like 80 people in this family out there. How highly unusual at 4 o'clock in the morning. How highly unusual any time, if you know the truth." But anyway, he said, "Come out and get your patient." So I went out to the front. And the first thing I noticed was the mother. She had the most beautiful blue eyes I've ever seen before in my life. And the dad was good looking and stuff. And the 80 people with this family, she was right about that. He was right about that. And I looked at, in the most gorgeous blue eyes I've ever seen before in my life, that little girl laying on that cart, and in her little arms she had a bear, and she had a blanket wrapped around that bear, hanging on him for dear life. And I remember thinking to myself, "And you didn't want to be here, you selfish person." I hated myself at that particular moment, let me tell you. "I'm going to be the best nurse I've ever been before in my life," and by God, I was too. And anyway, I'd been over and I talked to her, and I said, "Oh, you brought your little baby bear down to surgery." Tried to tell me her little bear was going to have a liver transplant, and I said, "Oh, you're both going to have one." And she said, no, just the bear, you know. But we sent the family out the waiting room. That mom was in absolute hysterics, I got to tell you guys. And this baby looked at me and she said, "Why is my mommy crying? Go tell my mommy not to cry. Because of Alcoholics Anonymous, my brother in this program, I was able to tell that little girl the truth." And I said, "Your mommy's crying because your mommy loves you so very, very much. And she's just worried about you. And she wants you to get better and stuff." And that seemed to settle her down a little bit and stuff. And, you know, we have an anesthesiologist at UCLA who loves to play with the kids. He was just a delight to work with. So when she got her IV started, the bear got an IV started. And his bag was called Bear Juice. She thought that was real funny and stuff. And when she went to sleep, the bear went to sleep. It was really quite painful, to know the truth, but we put that little bear in a plastic bag and he was by her little head, her entire surgery and stuff. And I must tell you guys that 16-hour transplant did not go well. We almost lost that baby a couple times due to blood loss. I have never seen a few people pull together like we did that night for that baby. And 16 hours later, she went up to her room with not much hope at all, I got to tell you guys. She lost a tremendous amount of blood and stuff. And, well, we said some prayers on that one, let me tell you. And I became obsessed with this baby and had to see her again. You know, we have a rule at UCLA, you may not get involved with these transplant patients afterwards. They want the organs come from, we cannot tell them. It's best not to see them after surgery. Now, I tell anybody in this room tonight that I'm real good at breaking rules, and I thought, I'm just going to go up and see how she's doing, and I'm not going to talk to anybody. So when she was 6 days post-op in that transplant, I'm at that baby's room, and I opened the door to that baby's room, and I could not believe it was in front of my face. My God, the power of God, the power of God. Here was this little baby girl. It was the first time she went through the surgery. She was jumping up and down in her crib. She had diapers around her knees. She had a baby bottle in one hand. She had that bear in the other arm, and she put band-aids all over this bear. He had band-aids on his eyes, his ears, his nose, and I mean everywhere. And I stood in that hall, and I just cried like a baby. And that whole room full of people were in there. And it is not cool to bawl in front of the nursing staff. I mean, for the nursing staff to be bawling, but something caught my eye at the corner of my eye. And I'll be damned if our book wasn't sitting on that kid's dresser. And I was in that room like a flash. And I said to Mom, I didn't care if I got fired. And I said to Mom, I said, "Whose book is that?" And she said, "Well, that's my book. I'm here with Alcoholics Anonymous. So is my husband. Her sponsor was there. His sponsor was there. And those 80 people have driven 500 miles to be with this family. They were not from the L.A. area. And they showed me one more time what this thing is all about. It's about love and service, and that's all it's about." And I was impressed, let me tell you. And I asked the mom, I said, "How long have you been sober?" And she said, 5 years today. I thought, oh my God, her baby up for the first time. What a fabulous birthday present and stuff. And I walked over to this little girl, and she stopped dead in her tracks, and she looked at me, and she said, "Go away, I'm not sick anymore." I had my scrub clothes on. It scared the hell out of me, didn't I? I said, "I didn't give up here to hurt you. I can't bear to see how you're doing." And you guys, she gave me her little bear, and she said, "You take him home and take care of him. He's a nurse to take care of him." And I know why she gave me the bear, to get me the hell away from her, but I could pretend like she wanted me to have him. And I told the mom, I said, "I can't take that baby's bear home. My God, that bear went to that kid's liver transplant. You need to keep it from him." And she said, "Karen, please take it. She's got 50 bears in it from him. She wants you to have it. Please take it." And I felt like a fool walking down the hall, that bear became my most prized possession from Alcoholics Anonymous. They got to be too damned important to me. It gets to be too important, we got to get rid of it, folks. My little granddaughter said to me, "Grandma, can I have that bear?" She knows the whole story. And I said, "It's Grandma's bear, Brandy." And she said, "Grandma, I'm having a slumber party. I'm having my little girlfriends. I want to tell them that story." And I said, "Grandma will buy you 300 bears and a bag of Band-Aids. You know, it's my bear." And she said, "But I don't want those bears. I want that bear." And I said, "It's Grandma's bear." How bad does that sound? It's Grandma's bear. It got so bad to me, I talked to my sponsor about it. You know, my sponsor told me, "Give her that goddamn bear right this minute. You are the most selfish woman I've ever met before in my life. You got to give it away to keep it. Now give her the bear. You got the memory. Do it now, right now." And I thought, that's the last straw. I'm changing sponsors. That's the last. I obviously have not done that yet, but and I hope that I never do. But anyway, I just visited my Baron Lincoln, Nebraska. She's on her dresser. She's 22 years old now. She has kids of her own, and she has taken very good care of my bear. But in that hospital room, I thought, I need to reciprocate here. I obviously was not prepared for a birthday party, and I mean, something was in my pocket. It was a medallion for 5 years of sobriety. I was 14 years sober when this happened. I hung on that medallion for many, many years too long. You know, we say in Alcoholics Anonymous, you've got to give it away to keep it. You've got to give it away. And I'm a selfish woman, I'm sorry to say. I could not seem to find the woman that was special, in my opinion, to give my five-year medallion to from my sponsor. And the reason in my pocket, not at work, there's narcotic keys next to that medallion. I didn't tell anybody in this room tonight, when I open that cupboard sometimes, my eyes light like firecrackers. I can grab that and remember where I'm coming from here. But anyway, I gave her my medallion. She says, Karen, I can't take that. My God, Clancy. I said, no, I want you to have it. And I really, really meant that and stuff. And the nurses got wind of all this. We got a cake for the mother. We celebrated her 5 years of sobriety. I got my sponsor on the telephone. Within about 3 hours, we had about 50 cars in front of UCLA. And I cannot begin to tell you how proud I was to take those people to my home group in Alcoholics Anonymous and at the Pacific group. There's been no more contact with them. It's got to be that way for many, many reasons. But I know that little girl is doing very, very well and stuff. And, you know, the point I'm trying to make here is I could have missed the whole damn thing. How many times in my life I missed stuff because I wouldn't take a simple action like picking up the damn phone when it rings? You know, people say to me all the time, why do you keep doing it, Karen? Why do you keep doing it? And I know of no greater thing to say to them than where our 12th tradition says long form. So that this to the end, that my great blessings may never spoil me, I may forever live in thankful contemplation of him who presides over us all. And there's more reasons than that for me. You're the ones that walked me when nobody else would walk with me. You held my hand when nobody else would hold my hand. And you told me that you loved me. And I need you as desperate as I need you in 1982. You've taught me how to live. You've taught me how to love. You've taught me how to keep my pants up and all those things. And I don't do any of those things very well. But I'll tell you the one thing that I do with 200% absolute perfection, that is this, that I love this program. Winning in the whole world, and it's truly a story from an alcoholic hell I cannot even describe. I have truly been given, just like the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous says, I have truly been given the keys to the kingdom. And I'm going to say one more thing, and I'm going to shut my mouth here right on time. It has been one hell of a walk from Skid Row, Nebraska, to where I stand in Jackson Mills, West Virginia tonight, and I think that but for the grace of God in Alcoholics Anonymous, that I would have missed it all. Thank you so much for having me, and thank you so much.
I want to thank Karen for a wonderful message. And super glue?
For me? Thank you all so much.
Karen and I would like you to close the meeting with the Lord's Prayer.